But nevertheless, we have what seems to me
the quality of this tape will improve in a few moments.
This seventh chapter of Daniel goes back and retakes another view of the period of the four beasts. And these four beasts now are a very important element in the prophecy of that have to do with God's people and the church. We're going to see how that the four beasts prophecy also is closely related to what happens in Revelation and of some of the things that are said in Revelation. So we begin chapter 7 of Daniel, the first verse. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. Now you remember Belshazzar was the son-in-law, or rather was the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel chapter 7, verse 1. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Belshazzar was the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. He was actually the third ruler of Babylon because his father who was the actual son of Nebuchadnezzar was supposed to be the ruler, but he really had his son reign in his place, whose name was in Belshazzar. Well, the first year of Belshazzar makes this kingdom somewhere around 50 to 60 years old. I can't really determine just how old it was. Some say this was about 60 years after Daniel had received the first vision. Daniel's been in Babylon now for about 60 years. A rather old man at this point. He's probably 70, 80 years old at this time. And it's that long since he received the first vision about the great image that had to do with the four kingdoms. But this is another vision now that is related to that. Daniel had a dream and visions of his head upon his bed. Then he wrote the dream and told the sum of the matters. Daniel had a dream. Now, before he was interpreting the dream that the king had, King Nebuchadnezzar, but now Daniel had a dream. And the visions of his head upon his bed, which is another way of describing the way that he received this dream. And then he wrote the dream and told the sum of the matters. And Daniel spake and said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of the heaven strove upon the great sea. The four winds of the heaven strove upon the great sea. Now the great sea here, the Mediterranean Ocean, which is, of course, it's the sea that they had to do with in that area. There are several other seas had that were more minor, the Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea. But this would be the Great Sea, which would be the Mediterranean Ocean. And what he saw then was the four winds of the heaven strove upon the Great Sea. Now, the Great Sea happens to be the mass of mankind, or the world in general, which we had another symbol of that, you know, in Revelation, where this beast came up out of the sea. Well, here the four winds of heaven strove upon this sea, which means that it created a turmoil, it created unrest in the sea, and then as a result of this unrest, we're going to have something produced from this mass of humanity. And four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse one from another. So here Daniel sees now the four great beasts come up out of humanity. They're different from each other. They're diverse one from another. Now these four great beasts are going to represent, as we'll see later, four kingdoms, the four kingdoms that he showed to Nebuchadnezzar, which would be Babylon, Persia or Medo-Persia, and then the Macedonian kingdom of Alexander the Great, or the Grecian kingdom, and then fourthly, the Roman Empire. They were diverse one from another, which means that they had different laws, different forms of government, maybe even some differences in territory and differences in time, diverse one from another. Now, here are the four beasts. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. Now, we see these images of beasts. And as the archaeologists today find and have found the writings and the images that were made of those people that lived in ancient times, they had portrayed different kinds of beasts there that were not natural, that have a four-footed animal with a man's head on it, or that have another kind of a four-footed animal with wings on it. And so they were not natural beasts, but these other appendages that were put on were made to symbolize something. Well, that's what Daniel saw in the dream. And so the first was a lion. And we're going to have, of course, a lion and a bear and a leopard and then a terrible beast. That's the four beasts. But this lion had eagle's wings. And I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth and made to stand upon the feet as a man, and as a man's heart was given to it. So this lion had the eagle's wings. And the wings, of course, would imply that it was able to move about faster, more swiftly than a lion could. But yet, the fact that it was a lion implies that it was the king of the beasts. It was the beast that was supreme or could rule or overthrow any of the other beasts. And, of course, that very fittingly now symbolized Babylon. Babylon was the great kingdom. It was the original one of these four. It was the one that originated from who was the man who started all the kingdoms back there in Genesis 10? Nimrod. It came from Nimrod. It was associated with the Tower of Babel. It was the great kingdom, and in this image that Nebuchadnezzar saw, it was the head of gold. But now as he discusses this lion, which represents Babylon, he said that, I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth and made stand upon the feet as a man. So he saw this beast lose its power. The wings were plucked. And it was made to stand upon the earth, and it could no longer fly, and it had to stand like a man did, and not able to fly like an eagle would. And then he said, and a man's heart was given unto it, or given to it. Now this could be symbolizing a couple of things. It may symbolize that it no longer had the ferocious power of a lion. It had the heart of a man, which would be more gentle. But it also is very similar to what we studied about Nebuchadnezzar, whenever he was made to go insane for that period of time, and whenever he became like a beast in the field and had to eat the grass, and he had the dew fall on him, and then when he was returned back to his kingdom, he had a man's heart put back in. And so this could fit that symbol too, of showing even more strikingly to Daniel that this fit Nebuchadnezzar. Now verse 5, and behold, another beast, a second like to a bear, and it raised up itself on one side, and it had three ribs in the mouth of it between the teeth of it, and they said thus to it, arise, devour much flesh. Now a bear is also a very ferocious animal, but this bear symbolizes the kingdom of Persia and Media, which then had conquered and taken over Babylon, which was the lion. A bear is also, though, a very ferocious animal. I don't know whether in a contest, whether a bear and a lion, whether a lion could actually defeat a bear or not. It might be able to, but some of the more strong and large and fierce bears would be very hard to do anything with. But they say that in this area of Persia, that in those mountains there, this where the bear was the most prominent. And of course, this bear does symbolize the taking over of the domain by Media and Persia. But now this bear, it had raised up itself on one side. Now, just what that means, I don't know, except to say that it was showing itself. It was getting ready for the illustration that it was the conqueror, as though a bear would lay up on the side and have these three rib bones in its mouth. It had already conquered. It already devoured, and all that showed of these other kingdoms was three rib bones that were in the lion's mouth, possibly ready to be even devoured. And there are those who then go in to try to show which three nations these three rib bones might symbolize, but it's really not important. But it just shows the conquering nature of the bear. And they said thus unto it, arise, devour much flesh. That was what this bear did and could do. Arise and devour much flesh. After this I beheld, and lo, another, like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl. The beast also had four heads, and dominion was given to it. Now this third beast was a leopard. A leopard is also a fast and fierce animal. It's a spotted animal, which indicates from the spots that this third kingdom was composed of many patches of kingdoms put together. This is the kingdom of Alexander the Great, the kingdom of the Macedonian Empire, or what was later known as the Grecian Empire. And the thing about this, this kingdom had on the back of it four wings of a fowl. Now this, again, indicates the great rapidity with which this kingdom was able to move and to capture and to devour. And Alexander the Great, I'm told, captured more territory. He conquered and subdued more area, more people, and more kingdoms than anybody else for that length of time. He was a relatively young man when he died, but he was a great force while he did live and exist. But now, not only did he have the four wings of a fowl, but the beast also had four heads. And history shows very plainly, and we discussed this a little bit last time, how that whenever Alexander died, his kingdom was divided among his four generals. And then of these four, two of them became the most prominent. You know, one was Egypt, and one was Syria, and then this Egypt and Syria is what then later was turned into the Roman Empire. So the four heads are probably symbolizing the fact that this kingdom would be ruled, after Alexander the Great died, by his four generals, dividing it into four parts. So he called it four heads. And dominion was given to it. Now, dominion here, of course, means the power that it has to reign, to rule. And Daniel has stressed here that the dominion was given to it. Now, it looks like, from a historical standpoint, that this beast has conquered and devoured and earned and made itself the ruler. But he really says the dominion was given to it, showing that God, after all, does still, and did at that time, and would in this vision, control and arrange the way that the power was to be distributed and what group or political form was to have dominion at what time. After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible. Now the greatest description it seems that he can make of this fourth beast is just that it is a terrible beast. A fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it. And it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it. And it had 10 horns. Now this was a terrible beast. And he describes it as having the iron teeth. And a little later on he's going to say that it has the brass claws too. And this beast was so great and powerful and terrible that it devoured and brake in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it. Whenever it came to conquer, it just broke into pieces and devoured, and then anything it was left, it just stamped it with its feet, just ground it into smithereens, it seems. And it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it. That is, it was yet different from all the others, different in its manner of conducting itself, in its government, and probably even in some of its territory, different from all the others. It stood out and apart. It was a separate beast. And it had 10 horns. Now, the 10 horns is a very significant element of this, because we're going to have these 10 horns mentioned several times in this chapter, and also it's mentioned in Revelation. I considered the horns, and behold, there came up among them another little horn, before whom there were 3 of the first horns plucked up by the roots. And behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth speaking great things. Now, the 10 horns are thought to be either literally 10 kingdoms that the Roman Empire later became, or they are, what's probably more accurate, the 10 horns represent any kingdom that degenerated or that came out of the Roman Empire, which later would rule the world. And it could be, 100 kingdoms or 10 kingdoms or whatever, but 10 just a number representing the fact that it broke into numerous other kingdoms. So that all governments today probably have somewhere as their back to the Roman Empire. But after these 10 were there, then he saw 1 horn rise up that apart from the 10 horns. 1 horn seems Roman Catholic Church, because their description is going to really fit it here later on. And the Roman Catholic Church in the 8th century, somewhere around 750 or 60, had 3 of the kingdoms that were had come off of the Roman Empire, had 3 of those kingdoms given to it, and it assumed the reign over them. The kingdom of the Lombards and Ravenna and Rome itself. And even today, the Roman Catholic Church is looked upon as a political power. This nation sends an ambassador to it, and it still has this little dominion there in Rome. Well, 3 of these 10 horns were rooted up, and this 1 horn took the dominion over them. Now, this horn that was symbolic of the Roman Catholic Church, he said that, behold, in this horn were eyes like the eyes of man. And the Pope, of course, depicts himself and depicted himself from the very beginning as being the overseer of overseers. In other words, he had risen to the top of the hierarchy. You know, a bishop is an overseer. He takes the oversight thereof. But the Pope is the one who was the overseer of the overseers. So he not only had priests, who were higher than they should have been with the other children of God, but he also had the bishops, and he also had the cardinals, and then he was overseer of all of this. He had risen to the top. So eyes, he says here, like the eyes of man, and a mouth speaking great things. And we're going to see a little bit later something about this mouth speaking great things. He spoke things that are thought of and looked upon and regarded by man in general as great things. Mouth that speaks great things. And as we think of this, and let's turn just for a second here. Let me turn and read from 2 Thessalonians, the 2nd chapter. We're in 2 Thessalonians, the 2nd chapter, where he talks about this man of sin in the 4th verse, who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God, all that is worshipped, so that he as God sits in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. So here this man said that he speaketh great things. Well, here we see that he some of the great things that he's doing and speaking. He as God sits in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. And you would have to speak some very, very great things in order to do that. And then he also describes him in the ninth verse, even him whose coming is after the working of Satan with all power and signs and lying wonders and with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they receive not the love of the truth that they might be saved. Daniel 7. We get into a little different change of scene, and it's very difficult, or it was really at first, for me to try to put together what all is being said here. And the only way that I can resolve this and get it to really have some meaning is to realize that this is not always given in the sequence that it actually happens in. He takes some of this up to the end of time, then he goes back and he goes back and picks up and from another part and goes out to the end again. Because if we try to take it in the right sequence, we're going to get in the same trouble that we did in Revelation, and it's not going to fit with what the rest of the Bible teaches. So in verse 9, you notice there's a new paragraph there in the King James Version. I beheld till the thrones were cast down, and the Ancient of Days did sit, whose garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head like the pure wool, and his throne was like the fiery flame, and his wheels as burning fire. Now this is a description of God himself. It's the only place in the whole Bible where there's any kind of a real description given of God, and of course it's not a description that we can apply to any kind of an image here on the earth. But the first phrase, I beheld till the thrones were cast down. Now, on reading this, it looks like that Daniel looked at this scene until he saw these four kingdoms or these four thrones cast down, and then God came and set up the judgment day. But some of the translators say that this thrones cast down really means built up, that there's the wording there can be taken either way. And it means that he beheld until he saw a throne or thrones that were set up. So it might mean that thrones were set up and the Ancient of Days came to sit on them or on it. Or it might mean that these thrones he just seen were cast down when the Ancient of Days came. Or they were cast down before he came. I prefer to think that it means that the thrones were set up until the Ancient of Days came. The American translation renders it that way. Clark's says that it can be either way. But to me, it gives it a better continuity to think of it that way. But it can go either way. It may be the thrones of these four kingdoms were cast down before the judgment day came, which we know will happen. Or it may mean the thrones were a throne was built up, or thrones were built up in preparation for him to come. And the Ancient of Days did sit. Now, it's as though he sat on the throne that were just built up. Whose garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head like the pure wool. Now, as we said, this is the only place in the whole Bible where there's any kind of a description given of God himself. His throne was like the fiery flame and his wheels as burning fire. So this describes his throne. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. Thousand thousands ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The judgment was set, and the books were opened. Now this sounds, of course, just like the judgment day. God on the throne, judgment set, and the books were opened. To those of us who've just studied Revelation, this is a very, really familiar sounding scene. Thousands and 10,000 standing before him, and thousands and 10,000 ministering to him, the angels. This sounds like it could even be Christ here on the judgment throne. And this may be Christ, but the commentators say that the Ancient of Days is talking about God. But of course, God and Christ have been from the beginning. And I beheld then, because of the voice of the great words which the horn spake, I beheld even till the beast was slain, and his body destroyed, and given to the burning flame. Now we know that this beast, we know that this Catholic church, this apostate church, will last until the Lord comes again for the judgment day. We know that he's going to be destroyed with the brightness of his coming. And so this seems to be the description of that. These great words that which the horn spake. Because of that, this beast was slain, and his body was destroyed and given to the burning flame. Now in verse 12, it seems that we go back now. Because if this is the judgment day, if this is the end of time, in verse 12 we would go back. There is a possibility that this verse 9, 10, and 11 are not the final judgment day, but it may be the time in which the beast loses his power, in which Satan is bound, and the reformation time. But it's sure having to tone it down to say that it would be the reformation time. Everything seems to point to the fact that it's describing the final judgment. The book's open, the thousands that are judged, and the thousands that are ministering, he's sitting on his throne, and the beast is destroyed, his body is destroyed, he's slain, and given to the burning flame. That sounds like that has to be the judgment day. But in verse 12, now we're going to go back. As concerning the rest of the beasts, this would be the lion and the bear and the leopard, or Babylonia, Medo-Persia, and the Grecian Empire. Concerning the rest of the beasts, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and time. That is, they lost their dominion, they lost their power, but the territory and the people and some of the forms of government lasted. And you'll notice, for example, the kingdom of Judea, or the area of Judea that we study about in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, they still were under many of the Jewish laws. They still had many of the Jewish officials. They had a king. They had a Sanhedrin. They had a judge and judgment. But still they were under the Roman power. So the bodies were alive. Their lives were prolonged. But their dominion was taken away. And it seems that he's going back then before the judgment day and picking up what's happened to the rest of these kings in the view of this beast or the Roman Empire. I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man came with the clouds of heaven and came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. Now, there's a big question in my mind as to when this takes place. This Son of Man is Christ. This would have to be Jesus Christ the Messiah. At first, you think all of this takes place at the end of time. And maybe this is Christ coming to set up his kingdom. But as we look at this chronology and see that Daniel has gone back now to look at what happened to the other kingdoms, and he showed that they had lost their dominion, but they still had their lives prolonged, that he's describing what happens during the time of their lost dominion with their lives prolonged while this beast is reigning. And what happens during that time? He saw one like the Son who came with the clouds of heaven, and the Ancient of Days, and they're before him. So let's look at just a moment, and that might be. First of all, Jesus himself, in Matthew 24, in describing the judgment day, he refers to himself as the Son of Man, Matthew 24, 30. He calls himself the Son of Man. Also in Matthew 25 and 31, he again calls himself the Son of Man, when he says, when the Son of Man sits on his throne and all these nations are before him for the judgment day. So Jesus alludes to this phrase himself and calls himself the Son of Man. And that pretty well defines for us then the fact that the Son of Man here would be Christ, because Jesus called himself that.